I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. We're going to start off with the news out of the Turkish capital Ankara over the weekend. You may have seen the video. One second, people are dancing at a peace rally, and the next, they're cowering in fear as a giant ball of flames erupts behind them. And that was just the first explosion. More than 100 people killed, some 600 wounded by a double suicide bombing at that rally. This ranks as Turkey's worst ever terrorist attack and prompted Turkey's prime minister to say today these attacks will not turn Turkey into a Syria. Still, the Syrian conflict has its way of leaking across borders. Earlier today, I spoke with my BBC colleague Mark Lowen in Ankara.
The hospitals were, of course, flooded with emergency cases among injured and seriously injured, some still in intensive care. We also went to the morgue today, and some bodies are still actually inside the morgue undergoing forensic analysis because they were so mutilated by the bombs that there's very little left to actually analyze. And among the bodies that are still there, or body parts that are still there, are the remains of the suspected two suicide bombers, who the Turkish Prime Minister says he suspects that the number one suspect now is Islamic State, the group calling itself Islamic State or ISIL. And he's made a connection between the bombing here in Ankara and another deadly bombing in the predominantly Kurdish city of Suruç in southern Turkey in July that killed over 30 people and which was also blamed on Islamic State.
Why would ISIS want to launch an attack like this or the one back in July?
Because Turkey is now part of the anti-ISIS coalition, US-led coalition. Turkey was a sort of reluctant part of it for some time, not allowing the US to use its air bases here in Turkey. But a few weeks ago, Turkey relented. There appeared to be a deal struck behind closed doors between Ankara and Washington. So now some of the airstrikes against ISIS in Syria and Iraq are coming from a very big US air base in Incirlik in southern Turkey. That, of course, led Turkey to be much more exposed to the ISIS threat. There was a video made by ISIS Central Command in Raqqa, directly threatening Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. And it is thought that there was a threat to launch attacks in four Turkish cities. The problem, though, in a sense, for the Turkish government is trying to sell that narrative to a deeply sceptical public, because there is immense mistrust here in Turkey at the moment among vast swathes of the population towards this government, and particularly towards this president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who is extremely divisive. You either love him or you hate him. And for those who hate him and for those who hate the government, they do not believe that IS is behind this. They believe that that is a convenient scapegoat, and they are instead blaming elements within the state or elements within the so-called deep state, as it's known here, which are basically murky nationalist groups that have often over the decades acted either in collusion with or in support of the government.
Today in Ankara, I gather funerals are happening for some of the victims from this weekend's attack. What kind of pall has that cast over the city? How's the city responding to the tragedy?
Well, Turkey is just in deep mourning. I mean, I was at a funeral yesterday, and it is absolutely tragic when you are there. The wailing, the sobbing, as people realize that lives were stolen far too early and in a matter of seconds. The youngest victim here was 9 years old in the bombing. Families have lost several members of their loved ones. One chap I spoke to, he couldn't speak because he was sobbing so much, and he simply said, "I wish I were dead too. To be alive to witness this is just simply too terrible." Turkey has been profoundly shaken by this. It is the worst attack ever in Turkish history. There is a rush to identify who was behind these attacks in order to reassure the country at the moment. But this tragic event will be seared into the consciousness of Turkey for decades to come.
That was the BBC's Mark Lowen in Ankara. As Mark said, the fallout from this bombing extends well beyond Ankara. Residents in the southeastern city of Diyarbakir are taking the attack especially hard because it's a place that many Turkish Kurds call home, including two high-profile Kurds who were killed in the bombing. Jacob Resnick is on the line from Diyarbakir.
Well, things are quite tense here. There's a lot of anguish for the people that were lost in Ankara. There's a lot of dismay. And right now, Diyarbakir is actually also burying its own dead. Today, there was a funeral that had a prominent political candidate from a pro-Kurdish party and an elderly peace activist known locally as, I guess you could translate it as Mother Miriam. And they were both killed in Ankara on Saturday. aside from that, between, I'm told, 6 and 8 people have been killed in the city since Saturday.
What are those deaths about?
Well, since July, the ceasefire between the Turkish military and the PKK has broken down. And so there are regular clashes, and it's gotten pretty bloody. The deaths are in the hundreds. So we've had attacks on Turkish police, Turkish military, basically security forces in uniform by the guerrilla group, and then harsh retaliations by armored vehicles and also aircraft, not only in southeastern Turkey here where I am, but also in the PKK bases in northern Iraq. And so as people were mourning their dead, F-16s were buzzing right overhead. And at one point it was pretty, I don't know how to describe it, but, you know, when you have the sound of mourners being drowned out by the roar of jet engines, I don't know exactly why they were flying so low at that time, you know, in the middle of broad daylight like that. I don't know if it was meant to be a provocation, but the people on the ground certainly perceived it to be that way.
The rally in Ankara where the suicide bombings took place, it was not a pro-Kurdish rally, but there were a lot of Kurds there. Do people in Diyarbakir believe the Kurds were targeted in the suicide bombing or that this was ISIS coming into Turkey and wreaking havoc?
They believe that they were specifically targeted, and I'll tell you why. This was billed as a peace meeting. That's exactly what it was called, Barış Meeting, and it was basically a protest against the government continuing to, or basically the government rejecting the PKK's offer of a ceasefire.
So after the bombing in Ankara, apparently the Turkish government hit PKK targets with airstrikes. What do people in Diyarbakir think of that kind of response?
They see it as totally counterproductive. It would be oversimplification to say that the PKK doesn't represent anybody or does represent all Kurds. You know, of course, there's lots of gray areas here. But for the most part, what the main mandate we've seen from the election results in June is people, they want peace. And when you have one side of the combatants, you know, saying, hey, let's lay down arms and go back to talking to each other, and the other says flat out no, and then you have a horrific attack like that against civilians and the whole country's in shock, there's a lot of head scratching of like you just go back on the offensive.
Where is Prime Minister Erdogan in all of this? Do the Kurds in Diyarbakir feel like he has their back?
That's a really good question. I wish I knew. It's really interesting, Marco, because Mr. Erdogan is a big television star in Turkey, and he has 1 hour, 2 hour speeches carried live on afternoon television, you know, a few times a week. He has not spoken publicly since this bombing attack. And that is really, really odd, I think. He's put out some statements condemning the attack, but all the FaceTime with the cameras has been Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu. He's not seen as a very powerful figure in Turkey. He's kind of seen more as a top lieutenant or a deputy of Erdogan, even though he is the prime minister. So no, Erdogan has been keeping a very, very low profile. And that raises, I think, a lot of questions. When a country is faced with something so horrific and would want to have a come together and heal or have some leadership, you know, the top man is nowhere to be seen.
Reporter Jacob Resnick there in Diyarbakir, Turkey. Turkey may be condemning ISIS now, but Turkey's relationship with ISIS has been pretty complicated. I spoke with Ayman Al-Tamimi today. He's a specialist on Islamic militant groups and a fellow with the Philadelphia-based Middle East Forum. So, Ayman, the Islamic State was long a player in Iraq, even before it was called ISIS. Remind us when it became a player in Syria.
Officially, it became a player in Syria when it announced itself as ISIS in April 2013. Likely, though, there had been some agitations going on the ground within Syria for some months before that. But in terms of how ISIS and its relation with Turkey, how that played out, that really only comes to light in 2013 as ISIS is expanding across northern Syria. And then in particular, you see this large influx of foreign fighters crossing in from Turkey, the majority of them joining ISIS.
Yeah, so what was Turkey's attitude about all of this at the time?
Yeah, at the time it didn't really care, at best, because early on in ISIS's existence in northern Syria, there broke out extensive fighting with Kurdish forces. And at the time also, a lot of rebel groups within Syria threw their lot in with ISIS in terms of fighting against and expelling Kurdish militias from a variety of localities across northern Syria. But Turkey's attitude then was like that of the rebels. Worcester just saw ISIS as a lesser evil, so accordingly turned a blind eye to the very apparent growth in its strength that was partly derived from the policy of such loose and open borders, which allowed for the influx of so many fighters and weaponry to ISIS. So that was gross negligence, is the least you can say about it.
Yeah, Turkey didn't really care. What about other people who are now in the coalition, like the United States? Were they worried?
Yes, they were, but verbal pressure really didn't amount to much. In truth, really, the tightening of borders only came very recently, when it became clear that ISIS, suspected ISIS role in bomb attacks in southern Turkey that killed numerous people. So this border tightening is something really of the past few months. The policy before March, say, of this year, really was that anyone could cross provided they could prove they were in Turkey legally. It's how I crossed into northern Syria in December of 2014. I just went straight up to the official border crossing and showed them my passport and showed them my Turkish visa, and then it really wasn't much of a problem at all to cross in. So if that was the policy at the official borders, then you can see how lax I think security was.
Yeah. Why did it take so long for Turkey to take the ISIS thing seriously?
I think the two things, firstly, was the conflict with Kurdish forces. And it seems like Turkey sees both of them as equal threats. Secondly, ISIS never really threatened until recently, you know, direct attacks on Turkey. In fact, it was very apparent there. Their policy was to avoid that kind of confrontation.
So how serious is the Turkish crackdown on ISIS now? I mean, are they trying to have it, like the U.S., trying to have it both ways, oppose ISIS and keep boots off the ground?
Yeah, that's the problem, I think. You're trying to have it both ways of a no-ground intervention and then just talking. It inadvertently helps ISIS, or even if you can say that, I think it is true that Turkey has tightened the border security. And secondly, that Turkey has cracked down on ISIS networks within Turkey itself. But then on the other hand, when you look at the airstrikes, Turkish airstrikes overwhelmingly targeted the Kurds, Kurdish militants, and not ISIS.
Tell me this. Is there concern or anger in Turkey now, looking back at how their government may have had a role in allowing this ISIS monster to grow?
Yes, I think there is that sense that Turkey has sown the seeds of this problem. But I prefer to use blind eye as the term to describe Turkish policy towards ISIS at that point.
Ayman Al-Tamimi with the Philadelphia-based Middle East Forum. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.